to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf, that guy in the glasses. That's Jenna the Wolf Hall of Famer. People.
Absolutely. Update the board.
Stop hitting my phone.
It has been one day since Jenna Wolf missed work.
Stop, man. You got.
Let's see if we can get to triple digits for the first time ever.
I could not be here. My flight was canceled because of the weather. We had some bad weather in New York. I canceled
the stretch. The JetBlue app has a little conflicting reports.
There's no reason Nick needs to be monitoring my flight.
Delayed. Wanted another day down in Florida.
I missed you. How about that? I genuinely felt like something was missing. We've got a great show today. The Cowboys could have big drama on their hands with one of their stars. Kyrie has a message for the haters, but we start with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Her tan is real. The guy was like, it's real, bro. That's her.
Say what you will about the Lakers. At least they are consistent, like my tan. Consistently losing, that is. Lakers suffered another loss last night, this one to the hands of their crosstown rivals, the Clippers. That is 9 losses in 12 games for the Lakers now. Last night, LeBron was asked about potentially being shut down for the rest of the season. Here's what he had to say about that.
Well, I mean, that's a conversation that probably had between me and Luke. Going forward, I don't know what the mathematic was going on as far as that with the postseason, things of that nature. So I felt like this was definitely a game that we needed tonight for obvious reasons. There's a team that we were chasing, and we didn't take care of business. So, you kind of look at the rest of the games and look at the percentages of what's going on here in the future and see what makes more sense, for not only me, but for the team itself as well.
All right, CC, let's break it down a little. You think the Lakers should shut LeBron down for the rest of the season? How does that help and or hurt him and the team?
And I would say, as far as my sports opinions, typically I come from a traditional standpoint. Like as far as Zion, the question, man, should Zion shut it down? No. Should guys play in the bowl games? Yes. Because I know that whole process of playing, it gets you better. But the difference is, all these kids are at the beginning of their career. And now we're talking about one of the greatest of the greats in LeBron James. What should the Lakers do? And if you had asked me this question a month ago, I'd have been like, oh, absolutely not, man. He's got to play. Man, the people have paid their money for their season tickets. Like, it's part of his responsibility. They got a greater responsibility. If they're going to try to win a championship in LeBron's tenure, and because he signed up for 4 years. He's not doing a one-by-one like in Cleveland. You know you have him for 4 years. So you have to look at it, and I never thought that I would be on this. I would shut him down.
Wow.
And the reason why I would shut him down is because he doesn't look like himself. Last year played 82 games and was brilliant in the playoffs. And when LeBron said last week he was going to hit activation mode, but nothing happened. I've never seen that before. So when that right there, to me, that's the reason why I would shut him down. I believe that he's not at his playing weight. I believe that his groin is still bothering him somewhat. And I don't think you gain anything by putting an extra 15 to 20 games on LeBron at 38 to 42 minutes. What do you gain? LeBron James is about a couple things, all right? Number one thing now would be to secure another free agent or two to be able to come to the Lakers. And then after that, it's about how do we get this to the parade? How do we win a championship to get to the parade? All the other stuff does not matter. So I would not play him. I would not put those minutes on him. I would give his body the first time to decompress in years. You're talking about 13 years since he's been in the playoffs? Regardless of what kind of athlete LeBron is, it takes its toll. And I was listening to David Griffin last night. I got a lot of respect for his sports and his opinion on the NBA. And he just talked about the greatest players that have ever played the game. When they hit the wall, typically there was no comeback from that. So once their skills started to decline, that, man, they started to fall. It was hard for them to get back ever to that level. And it's a perspective that I had never really looked at. But when you look at the greatest players, it's pretty consistent.
And David Griffin, people don't know, he was the GM of the Cavs for LeBron's first 3 years back there, was not the GM last year. Now he's doing some media with NBA TV. LeBron also said some other things that we didn't have the tape of where he was very definitive. He's like, I'm going to play. He said, talked about how it would take the highest levels of Laker leadership to try to convince him otherwise. He said, if I'm healthy, I'm going to be out there because there's always people watching. Now, I understand what you're saying, and I agree it is all about championships. It is all about what puts the Lakers in the best position to compete for a championship, and that's why I would not shut LeBron James down. He has played at least 85 games every single season of his career since year three. He's played at least 79 games every year of his career since his rookie season. He has been on 90-plus game seasons each of since the lockout year. He's going to max out this year at 64 games. Either way, he's going to have 2 months off this year that he hasn't had in a decade. And the idea of having a guy who has trained himself to be ready for April, May, June, we know it's ending in April. That it might now, for some people, think it should end in March, I don't think that would be best for him. I don't think that's the way he gets his cardiovascular back where it needs to be, his conditioning back where it needs to be. I don't think that sets himself up for the offseason the way he wants to.
Well, his cardio is not that important. Right now, it's the injury and his weight. All right, I believe you can get your cardio back. There's a number of ways he can do it, but the decompressing of your body. If 2 months is good, then 4 months is great. All right, LeBron should be able to, because he hadn't had that opportunity. And he's also, he's dealing with a body that did not respond to the injury the way he thought he did. I'll go back to Steph Curry's words. Steph had a very, very similar injury, missed 11 games, has gone on to finish this or continue with this season with no type of setback. He said, you got to watch it. This groin, it's a little tricky. And I didn't think too much of it, but it makes me go back and seeing LeBron where he is right now. Now, there is no bigger fan of LeBron James. But for right now, it's about perseverance and trying to get the best basketball out of him. So why should I waste 15 games at the end of the season that doesn't mean anything? It's not going to help get Anthony Davis there. It's not going to get Kawhi to come there. It's not going to make Kyrie come there. So why would I do it?
I don't think they should continue to play him 40-plus minutes as he has, I think, in 5 of the last 8 games. He's played more minutes per game since the injury than he did before the injury. I'd be totally fine with 32 to 36 minutes, which is, by the way, what they wanted him at the beginning of the year before panic set in. And if you're going to say he's not going to play back-to-backs, where he's going to be on a very cautious load management. But I don't think LeBron would accept being shut down the rest of the season. And the element of what the other quote he had is, he said, you got to play because there's always somebody watching. There is an element of, he has a greater responsibility to the league and to the paying customer than any other player in the league. He is the biggest draw of any player in the league. The Warriors might be the biggest draw mm-hmm. as a team.
Yes.
But he individually.
Yes. And I understand that. And that's a reasonable approach. Michael Jordan always said, I don't know the one time that you're going to get there to see me play. Right. And I respect that.
Right.
But right now, LeBron's got several championships, and it's about not how many points, not how many assists. Forget the league right now. It's about LeBron. And if he wants to get the best out of him, I believe he's wasting his time on these last 15 games.
But you mentioned all the years that LeBron has played, how many minutes and how many games has played. LeBron James has never had an injury like this. He's never said, oh, I'm going to go into activation mode, and then activation mode not worked. He's never had a team that he couldn't get to rally somehow. So do you think there is something positive about him maybe sitting down, that maybe this other team can figure out, the team without him, how to make it work without him?
No, I don't think there's any positive team-building part of it, because next year the Lakers are going to have a different coach. If the offseason works out the way they want it to, they're going to have a drastically different team. All the guys on one-year deals are going to be gone. They're either going to bring in, if they works out the way they hope, a key free agent, or they're going to trade guys for Anthony Davis, potentially both options if it's the ideal offseason. Like, no, it's not. But I would like to see LeBron, when Lonzo comes back, see how, because they haven't had a bunch of time working together. They do need those extra reps. I do not think, if LeBron plays another game this year, 40 minutes, that's insanity. That we can totally agree on. There should be no game where it's like, we wanted to rest him more, but we got a chance to win it. They are done. They were done in my eyes before last night. Now it's all but official. They have, according to 538, the same chance of the number one pick as they have of making the playoffs, which is 1% on both ends of it. So it's cooked for the Lakers at this point. I just don't know that if LeBron will be in best position for 2019-20, having played less than 50 games when he's used to playing around 100.
Yeah, so I'm going to play 15 games with Lonzo, who potentially won't be here next year. But I'm going to put those games on LeBron. that overall developing the rest of the roster, that's on the coaching staff and the front office. That's not LeBron's job. His job right now is try to figure out what is the right weight for me to be able to go at. And I just believe that rest, after playing as many playoff series as he's played through the years, forget about the physical pressure, the mental pressure. Like, ain't no need to go Zero Dark 30 this year. We might as well get him on the show because he's going to be available. He should be resting, trying to get ready to secure one of these free agents. And also, he should be reflecting on how we put this roster together. Don't try to do that mess again. You can't be trying to put together a defensive team when this is a shooting NBA, get some space, make some buckets. That's what they should be concentrating on compared to you don't gain anything these last 15
games. That lack of shooting was glaring throughout last night, particularly in the first half.
Lakers dropping another one, this one to the Clippers. Take a break. Coming up, talk some football. Should John Gruden and the Raiders trade for Antonio Brown? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Here's something interesting. Studies show that security systems deter burglars. It's a fact, but there's still a burglary every 8 seconds in America. How? Well, think about it. Do burglars give up just because some houses have security systems? Of course not. They just find a house that isn't protected. That's why securing your home is truly a necessity. So let me recommend this brilliant security system built by my friends at Simply Safe. Simply Safe believes fear has no place in a place like home. So they made their system ridiculously smart. Simply Safe sensors will protect every point of access to your home, doors, windows, garage, you name it. Best of all, Simply Safe's 24/7 monitoring is just $14.99 a month. Alarms that cry wolf? No thanks. Simply Safe's precision engineered motion sensors detect the unique heat signature of humans, not pets, and they'll never lock you in a long-term contract. So go with the only home security I trust, Simply Safe, by going to simplysafe.com/FTF. Go today and get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/FTF for the home security I trust. simplysafe.com/FTF.
Welcome back to the show. We'll get to Antonio Brown in a second, but first, a couple of big plays from last night you might have missed. Mavs and Nets, and check out Luka Doncic hitting the buzzer beater from half court in Brooklyn last night.
Brooklyn beat the brakes off Dallas last night, as Brooklyn continues to be one of the best stories in the NBA this season.
Nice
little play from Luka. Luka also had a really nice step-back three in this game.
Yeah, he got shook down to his knees, too. That's the only
that might be coming up.
Hawks and Heat and DeAndre Bembry keeps finding his way into butt first with the reverse slam.
This is a good early matinee game. Came down to the end. Miami won by a point. But the Hawks got, a potentially bright future. Maybe two
just
top
get some
10
team
coming.
Colors, all right? You can't be powder blue.
I know.
Like, the Hawks, like, stop. I'm thinking watching the Clippers. I think, like, stop, Hawks.
I'm confused with some of these.
I mean, concentrate on the basketball.
No, this is the
part.
Same game, though. Hold on. Right here, Justice Winslow. Nice behind-the-back dime to Bam Adebayo for the flush here.
Oh, look at Bam. Justice Winslow. Man, he's finally learned to shoot, see? It took him some time.
Oh, really?
Took him some time, and now he's been a really
maybe
good player.
Maybe you'll start to admit shooting is harder to do.
Pelicans, Jazz.
Oh, good Lord.
Anthony Davis, the go-go gadget arms, as you guys taught me.
Speaking of confusing jerseys, every time the Pelicans wear these jerseys, I think it's the Nuggets. Every time. I know they're the ones wearing them, and I still think it's Nuggets. This is AD going up and getting it,
I'm
man.
Going old school Seattle Sonics.
Oh, Supersonics
yes.
jerseys? Mm-hmm. I'm with that.
All right, Gus on to Antonio Brown now.
Gus Johnson.
After Gus a number Williams of questionable comments he made regarding his tenuous time in Pittsburgh, it appears the Pittsburgh Steelers are ready to move on. Reportedly, they could trade Antonio Brown as early as this week. So where could the disgruntled wide receiver end up? Well, John Gruden and the Raiders are reportedly the most likely team to land him, while the Titans, Cardinals, and Redskins are not far behind. All right, CeCe, how good of a fit would Antonio Brown be on a Raiders roster?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question because John Gruden, what kind of offense are they going to run? Like, who's going to be their quarterback? Because they're on the board to get another quarterback. So now if they're able to get Kyler, you know, What kind of offense are they going to run? So I don't know. AB is most effective in a three-receiver offense where he can move up and down, where he can play in the slot. He can play both the X and the Z. He's one of the few smaller guys. I'm talking about 5'10 or smaller. That can play outside and can play, more in particular, the X receiver to the boundary where you have to build a block and the responsibilities. It's made for a bigger butt. He's been able to show the flexibility with his route running, the ability to build defeat double teams. Man, he can get the ball short and make big plays. So he fits into a lot of offense. I just don't know what offense the Raiders are going to run. And if John Gruden, if he's going to be successful, he has to replace the two players and the thing that he got the most criticism for. Amari Cooper, great locker room guy, good football player. Khalil Mack, great locker room guy, great football player. He has to be able to replace those guys to be able to regain some credibility. If I knew who the quarterback was, I might be able to say, okay, I believed it. But AB fits in any offense in the National Football League, but I just don't know who's going to be Gruden's quarterback, and I don't know if Gruden's system really has a name.
Culturally, it would be very odd to jettison a guy like Khalil Mack, a guy like Amari Cooper, and bring in Martavis Bryant, and then bring in Antonio Brown. That is the opposite of typically when a guy comes in as a head coach and tries to set a culture. Sometimes you get rid of some quality players because they have some maybe off-the-field issues or you think some discipline issues, whatever it is. He got rid of two guys who had no discipline, character issues. Amari might not have been productive the last couple years there, but Khalil Mack was productive and excellent. And to bring in Antonio Brown. Now, it would be a very interesting case study in Antonio Brown finding out how the other half lives. You go from the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise, their decade after decade after decade of success, their facilities, their ownership, to the Oakland Raiders, who once upon a time, when you were at Ohio State, the Raiders were one of the true standard franchises in the NFL.
If Al Davis was alive, I'd be like, man, go get him.
Right, but the last 30
because
years
Al
been a
Davis,
little different.
He makes it work. He makes veteran players that aren't happy. And the Raiders at that point, they were a destination for guys who had great careers and people had given up on them. Man, they just cultivated this environment that guys thrived in. But they also had a bunch of Raiders that were drafted by the Raiders, guys like Howie Long, foundational guys. So people forget about that. They just think it was a bunch of renegades. No, it wasn't. It was cultivated the right way by the draft, using free agency, picking up some veteran players, adding a lot of talent to a roster and a place where a lot of NFL players wanted to play.
You make an interesting point that you don't know how he's going to fair because you don't know what kind of offense or who the quarterback is. Look at the other teams that are looking at him. Washington, you don't know who the quarterback's going to be there. The Cardinals, we're not sure who's the quarterback is going to be there. And then you have the Titans with an injury-prone Marcus Mariota.
We know who the quarterback is there.
Correct.
We just don't know if he's going to be good and healthy
and available.
On the field.
No, exactly. Those teams.
It's a great observation, Jenna, and this is why Chris and Larry Fitzgerald both have said in the last week or so, careful what you wish for now. Because no matter how bad it got with Big Ben, you knew you were going to get Pro Bowl-level quarterback play. You knew you were going to have nationwide support wherever you went. Mm-hmm. Great ownership, great facilities. That's not the case everywhere. You talk about Washington. Daniel Snyder is, depending on who you ask, it can be hit or miss ownership-wise. The Bidwell family in Arizona, there's some good and some bad. The facilities in Oakland, until they moved to Vegas, are the worst in football. That's not me. That's not an opinion. I think that's a universally regarded fact.
I would bet that out of the NCAA Division I teams, there's not a worse facility in college football than what the Raiders and what the players experience there.
Certainly not in the Power Five conferences. There's at least 75 college programs that if you get drafted from there to the Raiders, you're like,
you're going backwards.
Right. Like, this feels like high school. And so now it'll be different for them when they move to the billion-plus-dollar mecca they're building in Vegas, but they got a year before that. But the thing you said, which is what makes the Antonio Brown conversation to me so difficult that I totally agree with, is we know what type of offense he's best in, but a player of his talent level, even if 99% of guys are system players, They fit almost anywhere. Any team that acquires Antonio Brown gets better on the field. So, of course, the Raiders would be better. They need everything. It would just be odd culturally to trade away Amari Cooper and bring in Antonio Brown.
I have two concerns about that. Number one would be the culture, because you have to be consistent in your messaging, especially when you're trying to change a program like Gruden is. So what's my messaging to the guys in that locker room? Oh, if you're a good guy, you do all the right things on and off the field, I won't reward you. But you be an insubordinate somewhere else, I'll bring you in here, and they're going to have to give them a contract extension. They're going to have to give them more guarantees. So that's the one thing I worry about. The second thing is, man, this is about ego. And as we saw in year number one, there is no one that has a bigger ego in the NFL than John Gruden. And we have seen the interviews with Antonio.
Right.
So now we have two of the biggest egos meeting. And if Antonio think he didn't have any support in Pittsburgh with the ownership, with the general manager, what's he going to do? Go to Gruden. If he don't like Gruden, does he go to Mike Mayock?
Well, that's...
Be like, okay, the coach hired you. So Gruden is the power broker in Oakland. I just don't believe those two egos can exist the way that they're currently trying to do business.
Because I do think Antonio is going to be best served on a team where the buck clearly stops with the head coach. And in no place is that more than in Oakland, where he's got 9 years left on his deal. So in one regard, that's a good thing, that Gruden can tell him exactly how it's going to be. So that sounds like it's a decent idea. If I didn't know, have an idea who Antonio Brown is at this point and who John Gruden is at this point, and that strikes me as not knowing them personally as oil and water.
100%.
And which is why it's so surprising to me that the Raiders would be one of the teams he keeps being linked to. I would think John Gruden would be going the absolute opposite direction.
To me, it sounds like desperation. And to me, he doesn't have time to be able to slow build it. He's got to...
He had talent.
And I think the Raiders know we are not a free agent destination.
No.
To get players, are going to be through the draft or trade because people aren't signing up to come play here.
All right, we got to take a break there. Coming up, a little basketball to talk about. Kyrie Irving had some spicy comments about the media criticism that he's faced. We'll hear those comments next on First Things First.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime. It's Saturday. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on...
That's your guy, see.
Let's go, Sean. Let's get it done, baby.
Time for us to go viral. Check out fifth grader Landon Spicer. The 10-year-old was the youngest competitor in the three-point contest, took home first place, channeling his inner Steph Curry.
This kid got buckets. And before his final shot, had a little extra time on the clock, put a little sauce on it with a little dribble. It's a whole middle school three-point competition.
Yeah, no, this is amazing.
Give it to me.
Oh,
step
that's
back.
Great.
No, that's Buckets. NBA.
Yeah.
That's NBA. For him to have the muscle memory to keep repeating that same shot, he must have a father or a coach that's spending hundreds of hours with him to be able to repeat that motion over and over again. It's one of the most astonishing things I've seen from a younger person to be able to shoot the basketball from that deep.
He's competing against eighth graders, so he's competing against guys that are 14, maybe 15 years old. He got a little Trae Young hair to him as well.
I thought he had a little Patty Mahomes hair.
Oh, similar hair for the both
Something
of them. They
there.
Are, I mean, that was awesome. Just getting buckets, young
Keep fella. Shooting it, man. Because he ain't going to be too tall.
No,
he's from deep, homie.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. So the Lakers lost again last night, and now their playoff hopes are pretty much lost as well. The website Basketball Reference currently gives the Lakers a 0.9% chance at the playoffs. But you're telling me there's a chance. Nick, was last night's loss more of the same for LeBron and the Lakers?
Absolutely, more of the same. It was. Nobody should have been surprised by last night. The only thing surprising was the Lakers had a 10-point lead early, but not surprisingly, they squandered it. They couldn't hit any shots. Rondo played well. They were without Ingram, another injury that they have to deal with. LeBron was fine, but not overwhelming in any way, and it was a critical must-win game. I think they would have been screwed either way, C, but to have any hope they had to win last night, and they end up getting blown out in the second half.
Every other game I've seen LeBron be in the last 8 years, LeBron went off and dominated the game, even if the team lost.
Must win
He games. Went yep. off on it. And since he said he was going to activate playoff LeBron, nothing happened. It's like you try to go to your car and hit the accelerator and nothing but comes out the back. So for me, that's why I want to sit LeBron down, because last night was just a continuation of everything we've seen since the injury.
All right, to the NFL now. Landon Collins and CJ Mosley were not franchise tagged by their team, so there are two impactful defenders available on the free agent market. See, what can these two guys add to a team's defense?
Both of these very, very good players. I believe C.J. Mosley is a better player, more consistent player. He's been an elite player, dominated in college football at the University of Alabama. I was shocked that Baltimore didn't either get him signed, because typically Baltimore, when they draft you and you play to that level, they end up signing you to the – so now they have someone different running the front office. Ozzie Newsome is not there. He's a Bama player. Typically, Ozzie takes care of those Bama players. But both of these guys, now I believe CJ is a better chance he'll go to Baltimore than Landon Collins. Landon Collins cleaned out his locker last week when he left.
So what you're saying is you think the Ravens are still obviously going to try to extend CJ Mosley. But the problem is now every team gets to talk to him.
Yep.
And it's an auction, and whoever wins the auction usually has to overpay a bit to win the auction. But I am not surprised by the Landon Collins news. I'm shocked by CJ Mosley news, because I know Terrell Suggs won't play another year, but the idea was, I thought, Terrell Suggs was going to hand the torch that he got from Ray Lewis, like always have an all-pro caliber linebacker with the Baltimore Ravens, to CJ Mosley. I know one team in the Midwest that's going to be calling CJ Mosley the moment free agency opens.
The Lakers?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
On to the Cowboys. It's reported the Cowboys are placing the franchise tag on their star defensive end, DeMarcus Lawrence, for a second straight year. Lawrence wants a long-term deal and reportedly will not sign the tag. Cowboys have until July 15th to work something out with him. Coming off a great season, 64 tackles, 10.5 sacks. CeCe, how do you think this situation plays out?
This is a tough situation, because typically the franchise tag, it's not meant for that. And we have just not seen great results. It is meant to be able to protect your best players when they came up the collective bargaining agreement. But the owners and general managers have found some little loopholes in it that you don't have to sign them. Because mostly you're like, man, you get the franchise tag, you're supposed to be celebrating. It's not a celebration anymore, because they might franchise you again. And we've seen it happen. I just haven't seen it be successful. And Dallas is so desperate for defensive linemen, I just don't know how this works out for them. They have to sign him to a long-term contract. They lost two of their frontline guys this week, Randy Gregory, David Irvin, both of them guys suspended. I wouldn't depend on those guys. The rest, I don't even know if they have a career left in them. So DeMarcus Lawrence, his ability to be able to maintain that defensive end spot, not only a great pass rusher, but great against the run, it's a priority for them. So for me, you would think that they would have signed him before, but the numbers – man, you have to the numbers for a defensive end, is he that kind of player? He's a Pro Bowl player, but is he?
He's going to become the third highest. If he gets a contract, he will become the third highest paid defensive player ever.
Then to me, is he worth that?
Right.
No.
No, that's the problem here. So it's going to be Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, the top two. He will get, if he were to hit the open market, which now he won't, and if he's going to come to terms with the Dallas Cowboys, which they hope he will, it's going to be south of $23 million a year, but north of $20 million a year. And so it is the type of thing where, in a hard cap sport, I understand it's like, we've got to have him. But at that price, hey, this is the risk you run when you franchise him the first time. When you franchise him the first time and you don't get a long-term deal worked out,
you tell him go out there and earn it. So he goes out there and get double-digit sacks, makes the Pro Bowl.
He does exactly what we want him to
do. And he does it with a torn labrum.
Yep.
And that's the other part of this.
Yeah.
So he says he's had a torn labrum for 2 years and has held off on surgery. Why? Because he's waiting to get his big contract. You don't want to miss time or be hampered in a contract year, which he's been in a contract year each of the last 2 years, the end of his contract, and the franchise tag year is essentially a contract year. His shoulder popped out in their loss to the Houston Texans at the beginning of last season. He talked about how he was almost crying on the sidelines, played the rest of the year, got to 10.5 sacks. What is now being reported is he's, and I totally get this, not going to have the surgery until he has a long-term deal. So if the long-term, if the negotiations stretch out, even if they get it done at the beginning of July, before the deadline, well, now you're talking about surgery then. You're talking about missing training camp. But he's got them. He had the Cowboys in a bad spot because of the suspensions to Irving and Gregory. So the Cowboys did what they thought was their only recourse, which is we can't let him hit the open market.
No.
We can't risk having him sign with someone the first day of free agency not coming back to us. So they put the franchise tag on him. But what C said in the beginning is absolutely right. This is not the letter of the law allows this. This is not the spirit of the law, of the franchise tag rule.
Right.
It is not so you can year after year hold a player who has proven he deserves a long-term deal hostage to a degree. And he's not happy about it. Now, if they don't come to terms, do I think he'd sit out the year the way Le'Veon Bell did? No. We've seen one guy in the last 15 years sit out a season, so I don't think he would do that. But it wouldn't be good. And if his people will probably be saying, you sit out as long as you can, have surgery as late as possible,
right,
and get your $20 million. But the Cowboys desperately need this player if their defense is going to have any chance at being as good as, much less better than it was last season.
Dallas Cowboys have until July 15th to work something out with Lawrence. All right, let's move on to the Celtics now. Things have gone from bad to worse to whatever it is that comes after the word worse. Another loss on Sunday meant another frustrated Kyrie in his post-game interview. Boston has lost 7 of their last 8 games with Kyrie in their lineup. And a new report says that Kyrie has become disengaged and detached. Here's what Kyrie had to say about the recent media criticism towards him.
It's a constant battle. You know, because media has just gotten just outrageous. You know what I mean? Like, I just saw some the other day where, you know, even, you know, it's just, he's the greatest player playing our game right now, but even seeing somebody question, like, Bron's body of work, like, my body of work, KD's body of work, and, you know, the team's success falls on the best player. And whether call it fair or unfair, but nobody should ever question what type of winner those guys are. You know what I mean? What type of winner I am. Or whether or not I have the team in first mentality. You know, it's like nobody wants it to be solely about them, but we take most of the responsibility, and so does the head coach. So when you have that and you have a relationship that you have to build with that, and I've been doing it, of being traded last year and just coming into this, it's a lot of news for our team. And, you know, we're still building for something. So it gets to that point, you know. I mean, it's just like, you know, it just gets to that point, and I'm normal. Makes players very unhappy. Very unhappy, I'll tell you that. I think someone told me that Adam Silver was talking the other day about how unhappy NBA players are, you know, especially nowadays because of just the scrutiny, exploitation that we go through of, you know, everything being judged or, you know, someone being, you know, a very high stature and people are just still throwing stones at him, just trying to break him and break him and break him and break him. And words are very powerful. And, you know, I don't want to disconnect from any other person that would take anything personal, you know, because I'm still that person as well.
See, we've talked on this show a lot about what Kyrie must be going through or how much of it should be placed on Kyrie Irving as the supposed leader and star of the team. What do you make of what's going on with Kyrie Irving?
Well, Kyrie Irving got what he asked. He said he wanted his own team. All right. He said, oh, man, you know, I got traded. Well, you demand to be traded. Like, this is all part of doing business. Now, I just don't know where you can make contract-wise $20 to $30 million, shoe deal $10 to $20 million, and not be criticized. There are no jobs out there that you can make that kind of money and not be criticized. Now, are the guys in the league, are athletes now, are they ready for the type of era that we're in? Obviously not. But why would he be caring what people are saying about KD? Why would he be caring about what people are saying about LeBron? Like, me and what's going on in my personal life and the Celtics, that should be the only thing Kyrie should be thinking about. So all these guys, they swear up and down, man, you know, I ain't listening to that stuff. But it's obviously they listening, they watching, and it's affecting them in a negative way. Now, I heard what Adam Silver said. And just being from a clinical background standpoint, yes, we do have more young people taking medication, anxiety, other things, more than any other era, any other span that we've ever been in. That's true. So we shouldn't think that our star players wouldn't struggle with some type of anxiety because they're not built for the criticism. This is the AAU generation where everyone has patted them on the back all along the way, everything. So now people making viable critiques of their basketball, oh, they're getting all ruffled and everything. This is part of the NBA, bro. Athletes been getting criticized all along the way. Now athletes more now because there's more people covering the game. But also, look at the kind of money you're making. athletes have never been able to make the kind of money they're making, so now they want to make all the money, but they don't want any criticism or scrutiny. It's not going to happen, all right? You have a tremendous skill that creates a tremendous amount of attention to the NBA, and you should be thankful for that. You should be thankful that there are people covering, because you know the other sports, hockey, they don't get criticized that much. They don't get paid as much either.
Correct.
All right?
So nobody makes the money the NBA superstar does. Nobody, I know there's, I understand what Bryce Harper just signed for. There's a couple guys in baseball, but and there's a couple quarterbacks, but nobody makes the money the NBA superstar makes. And they're the most visible, if for no other reason than the fewest people on the court. Fans sit closer to the court.
No helmets.
Absolutely.
All of it.
Kyrie's in, it's an odd way to put it because he's 26 years old. But it feels to me like he's going through a mid-career crisis. Like, because he doesn't know what he wants. Because a couple years ago, he courted all the attention in the world by going on a 9-month tour talking about the earth being flat. He followed that up with, this summer, he starred in a major motion picture based on a character he played in a sneaker commercial. Uncle Drew's a movie. You don't do that if you're trying to be the guy who now says, man, I just wish we could play, you know, just fall. He wanted the spotlight, and he said at one point in that interview, yeah, I wanted the fame when I was younger. Okay, but we're not talking about when you were 17. We're talking about 9 months ago. And so I understand the toxicity of social media, and I understand that Adam Silver talked about it. Athletes have always been criticized by media. But now every fan can get to him. And it's hard to turn this off. I'm older than Kyrie, but I'm not that much older than Kyrie. We both came up with this. It is very hard. I asked you this morning about something unrelated, about checking your mentions.
And what'd I say?
You don't do it.
But you're a
different generation than me and a different generation than Kyrie.
It has nothing to do with the generation, because there's some other things that your generation is doing that I am doing. I know it's not going to be any good. It's not no separation from an age standpoint. I know it's not good for me.
I think it is very difficult for people who came up in this era of social media, whatever it is, to disconnect from it. I think we saw it with Kevin Durant. We're seeing it with Kyrie. We've seen it not arguing with people in the mentions, but from LeBron. LeBron says, hey, we need the guys to shut off social media. Meanwhile, he's posting every day. But Kyrie doesn't know what will make him feel fulfilled. He said recently, basketball will never fulfill me.
Did we not see that kid in the fifth grade? Ever since I was in the fifth grade, I was playing basketball. My brother was the best player in the state of Ohio. I've always had optics on me no matter what. When I was in the ninth grade, my brother was drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. Everyone in my town said, don't worry, his brother is better than him. So from the ninth grade on, not only from a local spotlight, I was under the national spotlight. So I got criticized for everything that I did. So, yeah, there might have been some years that I might be separated from you, but I've been criticized since I was a kid. I've been under the microscope since I was a kid. So thinking the reason why I don't check my mentions, not because I'm 53, it's because I'm smart. It's because I know it's not going to help me. I know people's words. If you take them inside of you, they can't hurt you. That's why I watch what I say. That's why I don't say players are losers. I say there's no test that you can have. What I can say is guys are committed at all costs to winning. All right? That's a different thing. So thinking that just because people weren't born in a certain era and having common sense, I know it's not good for me. I tell Jen all the time, don't read that mess. Don't look into that mess.
See, that is so – you are one of the very few people that can do that.
Life is about disciplines. Life's about decisions. All right? So every decision that you decide to make, you have to realize that there is a repercussion from that. If you fall in love with that, when people say, oh, man, you look nice. Man, get out of my face. I march to the beat of my own drum. I'm not going to listen to other people. Because you know what? People don't know what I need. People don't know where I'm going. So why would I be going to them for advice? So being lost, this generation is lost and looking for the applaud of other people, trying to get clicks,
correct,
trying to be a five-star compared to working on being a star, working on being a good teammate, working on the skills that got you to that level. That's what we should be talking about, because all this attention, that's what's generating you that money. That's what generated that character, Uncle Drew. So it was okay when people clapped for it.
And the other part of it that you said at the beginning, which is totally true. You know a guy who doesn't get scrutinized a lot? Klay Thompson. He makes, by the way, he doesn't have the same shoe deal Kyrie has, but he's on a max contract. He is cool, chilling the way he is. Klay Thompson, we've never heard one time him say, you know what I want? I want to go have my own team and strike out on my own.
And just like Klay, who grew up with his dad, Michael Thompson, a Big Ten star at university mm-hmm. For the Gophers, NBA star, he's been under the spotlight. Mm-hmm. All right? So he has known how to carry himself. Kyrie has always been on this track to be a star. And then once you get to the mountaintop, you know when people hike up Mount Everest, you know where most of the injuries happen? On the way down. After you relax, oh, I'm here now. They happen on the way down. They don't happen on your way ascending to try to get there. Kyrie was okay when he was hitting that buzzer beater. I mean, hitting the big shot to beat Golden State. But now, how am I going to proceed as a superstar in this league? What's right. going to be my legacy? Oh, I care more about what people are saying. Like, you can't criticize Kyrie Irving's basketball game. You have to go off the court. You have to do other things. Because he is a dynamic. He's the best dribbler of the basketball
ever.
He's one of the best finishers at the rim that we've ever seen.
And then, of course, all of this magnified with the way the Celtics are playing. And if they weren't playing as poorly as they are playing right now, I don't think the spotlight would be as bright on him.
Of course,
right
and some of it is he's shooting himself in the foot. Yeah. Some of it is he didn't have to, before the season, say, I'm going to be here forever, and then a week ago say, man, ask me July 1st. I don't know anyone bleep. Like, for a guy who doesn't want people talking about him, he gives us a lot of reason to talk about him.
And LeBron has grown. KD has grown. Let them fight their own battles. All right? Yeah, you a lightweight. Shut up and do your job.
Take a break, because I can't follow that. Yeah, coming up, should the Lakers shut down LeBron James?
What'd they say? Get out of my face with that stuff.
Back here, first things first, Chris Broussard is with us.
Man,
welcome
so glad
to
I'm
the
still,
show,
yeah.
Chris. CC's still yeah, fired up.
That was heat.
Chris Broussard.
That was
please
heat.
Please leave me hanging.
That was heat, brother.
That was good.
Let's go,
good.
Chris,
he's
man.
Good
thank
now.
You, man.
He's
good to see you. My right. homie, man. Let's do this.
Let's talk some Lakers, Broussard. The team suffered another loss last night, this one to the Clippers. That is 9 losses in their last 12 games. Why'd they lose? Pick your reason. Slow starts, poor execution, questionable defense, head-scratching rotations. It's not good. Yesterday, a new report said that the team is expected to fire head coach Luke Walton after the season. Broussard, do you think Luke Walton got a fair shake this season?
Yes, I'm glad he got the full year. I think you even thought, Nick, that he should get fired at the All-Star break. I didn't think that would have been fair. I think he should have got one full season. I also think Luke is a good young coach, and I don't think there will be any problem with him getting another NBA job in the future, and he'll get NCAA offers too, I believe. So I think he's got a bright future. That said, I don't think he ever had a chance this year. I don't think he ever stood a chance. Number one, the superstar LeBron never bought in. Yeah, I mean, it was how long before LeBron, once he signed, before he even acknowledged Luke, before they had a conversation or anything like that? When your superstar doesn't buy in, it's tough. All right, number two, the front office, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, you weren't their guy. So they didn't have your back. LeBron didn't buy Eric Spoelstra initially. And when went to Pat Riley, was like, look, if you're going to win, it's going to be with this guy. If they had a conversation about Luke and Magic and Robert, like, look, he's going to be here the rest of your contract, then you just have to get in line and try to win with him. But he's not their guy. Typically, front offices want their own guy.
Yes.
So that was a strike against him as well. Third, the roster construction. We've talked about it. No shooters. You brought in LeBron James and no shooters. So he had a tough roster to deal with. And four, the injuries. Like, yes. We can talk about, and I know, Nick, you've been critical of Luke's rotation, which has had its ups and downs. But that's hard when LeBron misses 18, Rondo misses 34, you know, Ingram misses 11, Lonzo misses 17. And on top of that, you know this, you really don't need, when you got 11 guys and maybe 9 of them are at the same level and deserve minutes, that's tough. You know, you really want 8 or 9 that are above the other right. 4 or 5 mm-hmm. on your roster so you can easily set your rotation. So that's been a challenge for him. So, look, I'll throw this out finally as a sign where I think he's a good coach. I believe defense, when a team is good defensively, that's a big sign of a good coach, because everybody wants to play offense. But defensively is when you got to get guys, you have to teach them technique, they have to understand rotations, and they have to buy in and hustle. The Lakers were 10th in the league defensively before LeBron got hurt. They were 7th during the 17 games he was out. And then they went to 28th when LeBron came back.
It all fell apart. They are second worst in every defensive metric since Lonzo's injury. Before LeBron came.
Yeah, and I don't want to. People are making Lonzo out to be Dennis Rodman.
No, he's not.
But I'm not saying all that. But he is a good, solid defender. But I think just the LeBron coming back and not hustling on defense all the time, and the Anthony Davis trade,
all of it,
that just sapped the guys. So defensively, they didn't have it.
Every point you make's a fair one. This would be a difficult job for any coach. The level of injuries, the Lakers have been dealt with as much injuries as any team in basketball, and it's from their star player to their second best player. Every one of their four best players has either missed time, significant time with injury or suspension this season. So that's real. I think the front office did an abysmal job. Of all the places we're going to lay blame, the one that was the most obvious from the beginning and the one that was the most glaring up to and including last night, David Griffin said on the broadcast, last night, must-win game at halftime, LeBron with 15 potential assists, three converted. You know why? Because clang, 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 it was open threes missed. So, and of course, the Anthony Davis stuff, and LeBron has not been a good leader as the best player on the team. It's not just that he didn't buy into the coach. He didn't put his arm around the young players the way they needed him to. Maybe he thought they needed the whip rather than the sugar cube, but these guys, it would appear, at least earlier on, needed the sugar cube more than the whip. So all that's fair. But what's also fair is this. Luke Walton has not done a single thing this year that I'm like, oh, that's a high-level NBA coach. He's won 40% of the games in his career. Last night in a must-win game in back-to-back timeouts, you know what he drew up? JaVale McGee post-ups. Back-to-back timeouts. Critical game. One was a running hook shot. The other, he tried a Dirk one-legged fadeaway. Spoiler alert, 0 points on those two possessions. In the game against Milwaukee, and Luke took accountability for this, they call timeout when the Bucks have stormed back, taking a three-point lead. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can't get the ball inbound. Why is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope even on the court? He's been torched the last 5 minutes. They're running rotations out there before Ingram got hurt, where you have LeBron and Ingram on the bench, and the offense goes to die. You said he's going to get an NBA job, maybe as an assistant.
He'll definitely get an NBA job. I'm not saying day after he's fired. He has got a lot. A lot of people think he's a good coach in the league. He'll definitely get a job, no question.
I think his next job's the head coach of Arizona Wildcats. But go ahead.
Yeah, and that I don't know if he'll want to go to college, but yeah, he could get offered that.
Well, the Lakers have many problems, and it starts from the top. When you have Jenny Buss, her guy is Luke Walton, and Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, they haven't been able to hire their coach. So there's always a feeling that as far as a general manager front office, they want to have their guy in there. Luke was never their guy, and I believe it's big when you have LeBron James not buy in. So what did he go to L.A. for? Did he go there for Magic? Did he go there to make movies? Because he should have bought in the first year on the coach. Because you own the shot clock, LeBron. Like, you can't forget how old you are. You can't forget. You can't just give away a year. In Miami, he didn't have to buy in the Sproles. Man, he was early in his career. Man, it was a lot of things going to happen. But the only thing that saved Miami was the owner and Pat Riley. Because they would not go behind the coach's back and listen to LeBron and his complaining. So, is it fair? Man, this is pro sports, all right? He's been the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Was it fair he ever got that job?
Correct.
Wait, what kind of resume did he have? So, was it fair he got it? Was it fair he's going to get fired? No, pro sports is not fair. But I had a conversation with Luke Walton earlier in the season, and it was clear to me that he didn't know who LeBron James was and the taxing that it took for the organization and the coach that was going to be around LeBron James. So we had that discussion here in New York, and it was obvious to me when I left that conversation, no, not what kind of coach he was, but he had no clue of what he was getting into.
The next day you said to me you thought it was naive is the word you used.
That yes.
He was naive to the idea of it's a lot more when LeBron James comes on your team, then the X's and O's and the rotations. And you got to be prepared for it. Right. And you got to be able to, you have to, and people can use this as a criticism of LeBron. I don't know if it's fair or not. You've got to prove yourself to him if you don't have the credentials. Spo didn't have the credentials. And LeBron, as you're saying, initially
none
wanted him gone.
None of his coaches have really had the credentials.
Correct. And then he went and Spoelstra proved himself. Like, the Luke Walton, same draft class as LeBron. Right. Like, he's a little bit older because he went to college, but same draft class, same era. Like, at no point did I think LeBron look at Luke Walton and say, what can he teach me about basketball?
Wait, do you
Here's
think
the
that,
thing.
Wait.
Luke should not have been naive because two of his best friends are Richard Jefferson and Ty Lue. So he should have, I would think he totally, you know, went to those guys
Rich
to ask
tried.
Them questions and everything.
Rich tried. And Rich was part of the conversation, and Rich talks to him all the time.
Yep.
But still, what you hear on the outside, and you know this because you've been covering LeBron, you've traveled with LeBron, Nick, you're very in on the inner circle with LeBron. Man, that whole LeBron thing is bigger than you could ever imagine. Right. And the only reason why I understand that is because William Wesley called me when he was 14 and told me. So I've been following him. I've been seeing it. So, yes, I had to get used
and
to it.
And you had an idea of the LeBrons before LeBron, what the mayhem was surrounding Magic.
I was with Michael Jordan.
And what the mayhem was,
yes.
Everything surrounding
Wait,
Michael.
Wait, do you think that if a different head coach were here with the Lakers this season, they would be in a much different place than they are
listen,
right now?
Listen, I think a good head coach.
Who the head coach is.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rick Carlisle's their head coach.
Rick Carlisle's one of the top five coaches
in
the NBA.
And LeBron
given the injury,
he would have had LeBron's respect right away.
And he would have played differently?
I think the NBA has a lot of good things.
Well, LeBron was playing fine until they got hurt.
Yes,
got
he hurt, was playing so, yeah. fine. But that's what I think the NBA needs, a lot like what the NFL went through. They need a facelift on their coaches. They need to stop retreading these guys and get a new influx of coaches like the NFL. We got a lot of bright young minds. We finally got from the old school, hey, a guy in college, he can't coach into the pros. I think that that would help the NBA. The NBA is on an arc like we haven't seen it. And right now, I think that the one thing they're lacking is quality coaches or just a breath of fresh air of coaches into the NBA.
And an example of that just quickly here is the names that are going to be floated to replace Luke Walton. Jason Kidd, which would be a disaster. Mark Jackson, hit or miss. Ty Lue. And I think Ty's an excellent coach. I think it would work because LeBron respects him.
It's likely going to be Ty Lue.
That's what I think as well. And I think
Doc
that
Rivers'
would work.
Name is out there, too. But if I can get Kawhi and or KD,
on,
why
Jerry
am I
West
leaving
can't
the
lose
Clippers?
That battle, man.
Right, right.
But the point I'm making is, even though I think Ty's a very good coach and it would work, those are three names. None of them are new. Like in Toronto, Nick Nurse, that was a risk. That has worked out well. I didn't think they should move on from Casey. Casey's doing well in Detroit. Nick Nurse doing well. There it's been a long time since there was a half dozen new NBA coaches. It's like the same 45 guys. To your point, the NFL had the influx this offseason.
I've long said this. If you look at the guys LeBron's compared to, Kobe, Tim Duncan, Magic, Michael Jordan, so on and
they
so forth.
They all had great
They
coaches.
All had that iconic head coach. Mm-hmm. If LeBron had a Popovich, a Pat Riley, a Phil Jackson, especially earlier in his career, I think he would have won more titles.
All right.
LeBron could have gone to San Antonio this offseason.
No doubt.
Okay.
No doubt. I agree.
Oh, okay. Hey, be careful.
I'm just saying.
Hey. Coming up, do the Giants need to draft Dwayne Haskins? We discuss next on First Things First. Back-to-back Big East matchups coming your way tomorrow on FS1. First, Marcus Howard and number 16 Marquette face off with Seton Hall. Then Georgetown takes on DePaul. It all starts tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app. Among the takeaways from the combine this past weekend, one Dwayne Haskins. Haskins turned heads with the impressive throwing ability running right there. One of those heads, New York Giants GM Dave Gettleman. G-men are reportedly excited about the idea of drafting him. Would be pretty cool for the kid from Jersey to end up on the team from Jersey. See, you think the Giants need to draft Dwayne Haskins?
I mean, it's very, very rare you're going to have a kid who grew up in the area and wants to play for your team. When he does that, they don't have the first pick. I mean, I can understand if they had the first pick, which they do, and he was saying, man, you know something? I grew up in the Arizona area. I want to play. Even if he was the third or fourth ranked player, that's the type of attitude, and it's very rare. But they have a situation that's really prepared for them. Man, you got a Jersey kid that can play football professionally in Jersey. And I think that what they did last year when they passed up on the quarterback, and yes, they got potentially a once-every-generation player in Barkley, But I think his attitude and his personality, I believe, matches up with Haskins, that they feel like if we have Haskins our quarterback, Barkley is our tailback, also a New York kid, born and raised in New York area. So I think their personalities match up moving forward compared to some of the other personalities that they have in that locker room. So I think Gettleman fell in love because I know Haskins. He's an easygoing, good-looking, smiling kid, and he can throw the ball.
And he can play in this division in this weather.
Yes.
That's the other part of it. Like, you're going to play in the NFC East. You're going to play in the Northeast. Like,
means you got to be able to throw a ball that the wind's not going to affect it as much. Now, people don't give Eli a lot of credit. Eli actually has a better arm than Peyton Manning. Yes, I said that. Eli Manning has a better arm than Peyton Manning, but he's not a better passer of the football than Peyton Manning. So Haskins' arm and how he throws the ball and delivers the football does suit the Giants.
To me, this would erase any bad feelings about last year, about not taking Darnold or Rosen or Allen or whomever they would have taken if they would have drafted a quarterback at number two. Because I happen to think Haskins is better than all the quarterbacks in last year's draft except for Baker. Now, I understand some of the draft analysts are saying both Haskins and Kyler Murray would be the fifth quarterback if they were in last year's class. I disagree with that. I think Dwayne Haskins is excellent. I think Dwayne Haskins just proved as much as you can prove in 1 year of college football, short of doing what Cam Newton did, which was be an offense unto himself en route to an undefeated season. Here's my concern if I'm the Giants. If recent NFL draft history tells you anything, he ain't going to be there at six. And 2015, two quarterbacks taken, 1 and 2. 2016, two quarterbacks taken, 1 and 2. 2018, two quarterbacks taken, 1 and 3. If the quarterback is the first pick of the draft, as Kyler Murray is likely going to be, it would appear, that next quarterback is coming off the board before number six. So, are the Giants willing to trade up with the New York Jets? Are the Giants willing to trade up to make sure they get the guy? I would be. Even though I know they have other needs, none of it's going to matter if you're trotting out their 38-year-old Eli Manning with Kyle LaLetta as his backup. Like, none of that's going to matter if you don't have the right quarterback in place. So I would move up to get Dwayne Haskins if that's what I have to do, and they got to take the temperature of the draft and figure out how far up they would have to move to ensure they get him.
Is that a likely scenario? We hear all the story about the Jets aren't going to deal with the Giants. They have crosstown rivals. But can they realistically do it? And if not, what are their other options?
Well, the Jets, they got to try to get better.
Yeah.
And if they can utilize the draft pick, I don't think the Jets' room, as far as their draft, will be like, you know something, we're not going to make this deal because it's with the Giants. But when you look at it with Arizona being there, if they go for a quarterback, the Raiders sitting there at four, they need a quarterback. That's why at six, you have to be able to move off of there if you're in love with Haskins. And, man, these quarterbacks, man, forget about the ratings and everything. These teams on draft day, man, they're moving up to get those quarterbacks. Like, they might say they don't want him. Oh, he's not drafted that high. But on draft day, everything changed. And that's what we've been seeing in the NFL. And guys are picked higher than what they're actually rated.
Think about the last seven quarterbacks drafted. Carson Wentz traded up to go get him. Jared Goff, they traded up to go get him. Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs traded up to go get him. Deshaun Watson, they traded up to go get him. Mitch Trubisky traded up to go get him. Sam Darnold, they traded up to go get him. Baker was just sitting there. I mean, I shouldn't say it was just sitting there. The Browns had the worst record in football, so they didn't have to trade up. But typically, you got to move up to go get your guy.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.